Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMC ortho.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Vox Pop. And we are delighted that you are here, and we know that you join with me in welcoming Dr. Jennifer Michaels, who is an extraordinary physician and an extraordinary psychiatrist and the medical director of the Breed Center in Pittsfield. Joining us today, and she's an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Massachusetts, board certified in both general and addiction psychiatry. She's been in practice for over 15 years, although she does not look it. Dr. Michaels, welcome to Medical Monday. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, before we start to get the calls in, they're already coming in. Let me ask you this, Doctor or Jennifer, as we are prone to call each other.
We're friends, so.
We are. Yeah. There is an epidemic of heroin in this country right now.
Yes, we are in the middle of an epidemic. And I had a student doctor with me a week ago in my office, and we were talking about the HIV epidemic and how it was to watch that evolve. And we're watching the heroin epidemic evolve, sadly.
How do you treat somebody who comes in and says, I'm addicted?
You know, the good news is we have a lot of treatment options that work. The bad news is that the vast majority of people who have heroin addiction will never seek treatment. And the number one impediment is stigma, believe it or not. It's not that we don't have treatments and there's no access. It's that people will not seek treatment.
Is there an economic divide here that people who have a little bit more are more likely to seek treatment?
They also have a greater buffer, you know, between their lives and treatment. So it goes both ways, that wealthy people have more money that they can run through and more stigma in some cases that keep them from treatment. So it works both ways.
Are there pills that you give to somebody who's addicted?
Yes, we have shots, we have pills, we have films, believe it or not, that go under your tongue. And it's not that treatment, but it's a very vital part of the treatment. Mm-hmm. Today. And it used to be that we thought you had to hit rock bottom and you needed to suffer and you couldn't take any medication because you were an addict and you shouldn't take medicine. And now we've smartened up and we realize that medicine can work. You don't have to hit rock bottom. The earlier you seek treatment, the better you will do.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Get in it early, folks. And here comes Jim. All right, Jim from Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Okay, Jim, you're on.
What effect does chronic stress have on norepinephrine, serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin levels?
So, Jim, this is a great question because when we look at stress, we're beginning to understand that stress actually impairs our brain. When we're in the middle of a stress response, we're trying to survive for the moment. So the chemicals in our brain that make us feel good or happy are on the decline, and we end up engaged in a battle for the moment. And so we see literally brain damage from stress.
But look. I'm a stressed out person. No two ways about it. I got a lot of stress in my life. Isn't it something about how we handle stress?
It's how we handle stress. And then there's something called eustress, like a positive stress versus distress. And a eustress, we handle in a positive way. A distress is negative. And I think it's also how you manage it. I mean, how do you manage your stress? I know you're wonderful at this.
I like to work.
You like to work and you like to exercise.
And exercise is so important. I just read something where the doc said, your predecessor on the show, a cardiologist who said, exercise always makes you feel better.
Yeah, I love that. And it de-stresses always.
Yeah.
You also, you know, you have a lovely wife, you have kids, you have a dog, I mean, you have friends. Those are all your methods to combat stress. So you have a high stress job, and then you have ways to de-stress.
Well, the dog stresses me out too because, you know, he'll kiss Roselle, but he won't kiss me. He just says, "I'm fooey on you.
He has good taste. What can you know? He's a boy dog.
I'm not interested.
A heterosexual boy dog.
He is that. He is that. Jim, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's go to Audrey in Schenectady. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I want to hear from you. Go ahead, Audrey.
Hi. I'm just calling really with a comment that I'm a pain patient, and I've been dealing with the fallout from the new stricter pain legislation that was passed by the New York State Legislature in August of 2013. At the same time, I've been hearing about this heroin epidemic, and my best friend has become a heroin addict. He used to get pills and stuff, but now he does heroin because it's a lot easier to get a hold of. And I've taken the Narcan training to help him, you know, in case, God forbid, you know, I'm ever around him and something happens. I saved him from one really horrible, terrible, awful overdose. And I just, you know, I wish the legislature would go back and revisit this, because my feeling is that at least if you're on pills, you know what they have manufacturer standards and medical standards with the pills, whereas with heroin, it's Russian roulette.
Okay, I take it, Audrey, there's a question, and I think it's a great question. Go ahead, Jess.
You know, Audrey, you bring up so many facets of what we're experiencing now. You know, patients who have true pain have limited ability to get their medication now. But,
sure.
You know, there are non-opioid alternatives that are effective and biofeedback and other things to look into. But your friend gives a great example of what we're seeing as a negative effect or an untoward effect. We've removed our ability to get pills as easily, and now there's an upsurge of heroin. We're in an epidemic.
LCAP used to have schmooze. Do you remember the schmooze? And if you stepped on one side of the schmoo, the other side would inflate. So that's what we're talking about here, as we dealt with, as the legislature in its infinite wisdom or not, dealt with the pain pills, as Audrey is telling us. The heroin epidemic became, which was cheaper, and it just became much worse.
Yes. And, you know, my suggestion to the friend is get treatment, you know, whether it's NA or methadone or Suboxone. There's also an injection called Vivitrol that you get once a month that blocks your opiate receptors.
Really?
And diminishes cravings.
Well,
and
I didn't know about that. Well,
yeah.
I'll have to tell him that. No, I took the Narcan, and maybe if you could talk more about they have a Project Safe Reach or something like that out of Catholic Charities. And they were great. He came to my house. He gave me a 45-minute training. He left Narcan with me. And, you know, it's just, it's wonderful. That used to be, I mean, at least, you know, like the drug dealers on the street used to sell this stuff so people could pass their pee tests with the justice system. But now, you know, you can get it, thank goodness, to help your friends out.
Wait one second. Jen, would you remind us all about Narcan and
sure.
what it is?
Sure. So Narcan is an opiate blocker. And Audrey, I assume you have the intranasal, the little injections up the nose.
Yes, that's what I have, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's life-saving. So if you you love someone, you care about someone who is struggling with active heroin addiction, if you have Narcan and that person you love overdoses, you put this medicine up the person's nose, and it causes an acute reversal of the heroin binding in the brain. It's life-saving.
Can they do it themselves?
Well, if they're overdosed and they're unconscious, they can't.
Yeah, can't. Yeah.
But that was a very cute question, but no, the answer is. But we're smart. We're getting smarter. And so we're now giving first responders, loved one, family members, Narcan, like at the Breen Center, we now have Narcan
Thank God,
available
right?
in case of
mm-hmm.
overdose.
Okay. Audrey, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome.
Okay. Let's go to Ann. Ann, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Last night on Book TV, I was listening to a young man, British, Johan somebody, and he was writing about his thesis was that the alienation, the pain, the emotional pain of addicts could be better addressed. Like, I think he gave Portugal as an example where they've decriminalized, not legalized, but decriminalized, and the billions and billions of dollars used to catch heroin addicts, put them in jail, all that was used on giving them free you know, help, a job, a place to live, a community, and they've had, you know, apparently tremendous results.
Okay, and because we're running up against
the social emotional issues.
And we're running up against a mandatory thing.
Alrighty.
No, stay right there, Dr. Michaels. You're on the question of decriminalization.
Well, my wish would be we'd spend more money on treatment and less on the criminal justice system. I think it does serve a purpose, but more funds in treatment. I don't think that decriminalization is really the answer, but helping more people if they are in jail is the way to go, because people are less likely to recommit if they get the care they need.
And thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it very much. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a break for seconds. There are all kinds of phone lines open for you. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Be courageous. Make a call. It may save somebody's life.
Support comes from Ellis Medicine, providing emergency cardiac, stroke, cancer, and emergency care. Reinventing healthcare, one patient at a time, ellismedicine.org. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Serving hibachi dinners, sushi, sashimi, curry soups, Thai, and entrees. Offering daily specials, 518-432-0358. And New York Oncology Hematology, with 7 locations, 36 physicians, and over 350 oncology professionals, opening their new cancer center this spring in Clifton Park. NewYorkOncology.com.
And we are back with Dr. Jennifer Michaels, and boy, do we love having her. You know, folks, I just want to say that it is so important that if you know somebody who is addicted, if you have a question about the whole thing, our last caller said, quote, "I didn't know about that." That's the whole great reason for having Dr. Michaels with us. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And every once in a while, Jennifer, while you've been with us, somebody has called and said, you know, I'm an addict.
Yes.
What do I do? That's always a remarkable time. Let's go to Marcy and Keene. Okay. Marcy and Keene, you're on.
Hi. I was just calling. My brother is addicted to heroin. He's been, for about 15 years, he's been in jail probably 8 years out of the 15. And it's so easy for him to get heroin, like drugs like Suboxone and other things in jail. So it's hard for him to be able to detox. And then get out and start, well, not start fresh, but start out clean. But in jail, he's getting similar drugs.
He's able
heroin.
To get it in. Well, you know, many jails are starting a Vivitrol treatment program, and that's an injection that you have once a month. It blocks your opiate receptors, but it also diminishes your cravings. And so pre-release, people are getting injected so that they can't overdose. If they use heroin, it will have no effect, and it diminishes cravings. And jails are pairing up with programs like the Breen Center in their neck of the woods and creating programs for people like your brother. I don't know what's in Keene, but you might want to check that out.
Do they have to agree to take it before they're released?
They do have to. I mean, we do not inject people with Vivitrol against their will, but it may be an option. It may help them to get released sooner.
Because he's not in jail right now.
You're busting up, Marcy. We're having trouble hearing you.
Can you hear me now?
Well, go slow. See what we get. Go ahead. Marcy, I am so sorry. I have a feeling you're on a cell phone, and we're not hearing you. But anyway, it's a good call. Thank you very much for it. And let's go to Dan in Sullivan County. Dan, you're on. Hello, Dan?
Hello. Hey, how are you?
Good.
Okay. You know, I have a question that reflects on someone who got injured a long time ago, some years ago, and got stopped pain medication. You know, on the West Coast, they give people pain medication, but he basically became an academic to stop the pain medication. Due to this situation, people became heroin addicts, such as me. Like, I do heroin because they can't get pain medication to stop the pain that I have. What do you do?
So, you know, there's treatment with opioids like Suboxone or something like methadone that would address your pain and also address your addiction. And, you know, it's available in New York. It's available in Massachusetts. And I urge you to check it out because I treat a lot of people with Suboxone and some of them have chronic pain. And when they get on a stable dose of Suboxone, their pain is addressed. It's reduced.
Well, I'd really like to know how I can see you as a doctor then, because it's very difficult to get help here.
Okay. So, you know, anyone who wants help at the Breen Center, you just call the Breen Center, 413-499-0412. I need help. I'm a heroin addict. You get in within a week or maybe 2 weeks, a week to 2 weeks. And then, you know, we'll assess you and we'll do what we call treatment matching. Depending on the severity of your disease, we will match you with appropriate treatment.
Now, if he comes from Sullivan County, Dan comes from Sullivan County, would you know that? Is it possible, because he doesn't know what the options are in his area, for somebody, is there a place that can sort of match him up with the right people as close by as he needs?
Sure. You can go online to a site called SAMHSA, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA. And there's an area where you can look up local providers. You put in your zip code and it will list local providers. And that would be the easiest thing for you to do. But
right. Okay.
I urge you, you have to know it is not hopeless. I mean, I can do my job because I get to see people like you enter recovery, get sober, and have beautiful lives. And that life is waiting for you.
Well, I appreciate that. I've been in and out of rehab a number of times, and after a while it gets really old.
Well, the other piece to be aware of is that if one form of treatment doesn't work, try something different. And sometimes people in rehab don't want you to try methadone or Suboxone or Vivitrol because it's a medicine, it's a quote-unquote chemical. But if it's not working with rehab or an NA program, then add this on and maybe it'll work better. Okay?
Dan, thanks for your call, Dan. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and we've got two free phones, and here we go to Jeffrey in Newburgh. Okay, Jeffrey, you're on.
First off, thank you for the show. Alan's always got something interesting to give, but yes, you know, I've had experience with heroin. It's very hard to kick. I've never heard of Vivitrol, but the one thing that I find is that there's not too many clinics in this area. You know, everybody's saying it's an epidemic, it's this, that, and the other thing, but there's very few places where people are being treated. Number two, does the heroin affect your, let's say, your cardiovascular system? What ways does that affect your cardiovascular system?
Okay, let's do number one first as far as treatment options. And you're right that it is limited. The federal government only allows me, for example, to treat 100 people or fewer with Suboxone. So I could definitely see more people, but I'm limited by my license. You can go online and find providers in your area. And if it's not immediately available, get on a waiting list. That's my suggestion. As far as heroin and its effect on your heart, it's a chronic stress because opioids will slow your heart. You'll have hypotension or low blood pressure. But there's also a very real risk of an infection, cardiac infection. And, you know, bacteria love to eat the valves of our heart. And so that's the danger. There's kind of an acute danger of infection and then chronic stress to your heart with use.
What would be a symptom of that?
You may have an irregular heartbeat. You may feel short of breath. But if you have any symptoms, any concerns, I suggest you see your primary care doctor and get checked out.
I just have to say thank you so much. It's very nice to see that you're out there and helping people.
Well, thank you. And please get help because you'll get better.
And Jeffrey, she really cares. That's something I can pass on to you. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's go to, let's see, Elizabeth in Niskayuna. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi. This is a great show, very important. I'm wondering if you can talk about how you help people get off benzodiazepines like Ativan, Xanax.
Yes, that's a great question, because with all this talk about heroin, we're not really paying so much attention to benzodiazepine abuse. And it is things like Valium, Xanax, Klonopin, Ativan. And it's very hard to taper off. It can take weeks to months. There are people I treat, they taper over a year or more. And these are medicines that address anxiety. But you build up tolerance and you need more and more. And then when you try to stop, you have rebound anxiety. But what we do is we very slowly lower the dose and sometimes provide non-addictive alternatives to help with the anxiety while we're tapering. And we give you something non-addictive to help you to sleep.
Like what? What would be an example?
What I might use is something like trazodone. There are also sedating antidepressants like Remeron. These are non-addicting but very safe. And they may also address some of the anxiety of tapering.
Okay.
There was a point at which, Jennifer, that that there seemed to be an epidemic of some of these drugs, Valium, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Has that tapered off, or is it still around?
Well, it there was an epidemic. I remember way back when in medical school there was an epidemic. It tapered off. Now what we're seeing is the overdose deaths are a combination often of opioids plus benzodiazepine. So they're being misused by people who have a substance use disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But not as much as the opioids.
Now, we are seeing heroin on college campuses, and we're seeing overdosing. Maybe you could speak about that for 1 minute.
Sure. Well, it's an epidemic. You and I were talking earlier about this cohort of high school students and recent graduates who started pill addiction while they were playing sports or they had some kind of injury. And then as they became more addicted, they switched over to heroin. So it's not the face of heroin that we think of. From the past, it's affecting everyone, all socioeconomic groups and all ages.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
No, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's go to Rob in Glens Falls. Okay, Rob, go.
Hi. I'm calling with a follow-up on a question earlier. There was a question from a caller about the effect of stress on brain chemistry, and the doctor began to respond that in some cases there could be brain damage from stress. And so I wanted to follow up a little bit more on that question to hear about what kind of damage are we talking about?
Sure. And, when I say brain damage, I don't want to scare people, but there is a less than optimal functioning when we are dealing with chronic stress. There's a researcher named Robert Sapolsky who wrote a wonderful book, Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers, and it's about the effect of chronic stress. We get ulcers. We have brain problems when we have chronic stress, and what we see is a shrinking of some of our brain cells and some of the connections from chronic stress. High levels of cortisol, which is our stress hormone, is neurotoxic. It's toxic to our brain. So we've got to de-stress. We've got to do the good stuff in life, or else it hurts our brains.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. That speaks to it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Rob. Okay, 1-800-348-2... Pardon me. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Robin in Woodstock. Okay. And by the way, there's 3 free phones right now. You want to get in? No waiting. Okay. Robin in Woodstock. Okay, Robin, you're on.
Hi, Alan and
hey.
Doctor.
Hello.
Hi, I'm a recovering heroin addict. I should have 25 years next month.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
And I was wondering, I read an article about this program in Portugal. That not only is it decriminalized, but when the addicts get out of rehab or whatever, they give them training or send them back to school, try to give them some purpose in life. And I think that has a real, real value.
Yes. And if we help people to stop using, we have to help them to fill that time with something meaningful and rewarding. So it's not just about stopping drugs. It's about starting life. in recovery. And it sounds like you've done that yourself with the sober time you've had.
How did you do it, Robin?
Narcotics Anonymous.
Interesting.
I went to detox for 8 days, and I was introduced to that program. And, you know, I go to AA, too, but we see a whole lot of young people coming into NA. Unfortunately, many of them don't stick around too long now. But.
Robin, great call. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. Let's see. Randy in Kingston. Okay, Randy, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, Randy, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about Suboxone. I have a pain. I'm taking prescription painkillers, a hydrocodone. It's something I would like to taper down. My particular pain is a hereditary neuropathy, so it's unfortunately not going to go away. And some of the other drugs that they sometimes prescribe don't work for me, like gabapentin. SSRIs I can't take because I have another medical condition that forbids it. So I'm curious about Suboxone, one, whether it really does alleviate that kind of pain, like a neuropathic pain. And then more importantly, I've heard people are afraid to get on it because they feel they will then get addicted to that as well, and so they're no better off than if mm-hmm. they had, you know, that they would be better off trying to get entirely clean, in other words.
So Suboxone is buprenorphine, and that is an opioid. You know, it's related to all those other opiates that are used for pain. It does have analgesic or pain relief effect. And before it was used for addiction, it was used for pain relief. So, you know, it is an option. As far as getting quote unquote addicted, it's important to be aware that being addicted is engaging in substance use in such a way that you increase the dose without consulting with your doctor, you use to get high, you become less engaged in your life. You may become physiologically dependent, meaning that if you stop taking it, you'll be in withdrawal from Suboxone. But yeah. If you take it the right way and you're engaged in some kind of treatment program, you don't get addicted, although you physically will be dependent on it. There's a real difference between those two.
Well, I guess what I have then is I have the physiological addiction. I mean, I'm taking it for, I don't violate the terms of the prescription, but I don't like the side effects. I really would prefer to be on as few drugs as possible, and I just don't see why it's a benefit to go on this if I'm still going to be physiologically addicted. I mean, physiologically habituated.
You know, it may have a better effect because of the type of medicine it is. It has what's called a ceiling effect. So, ceiling effect. And that it's okay. Getting a little technical, but it means that taking a higher dose after some point does not have more of a physical effect. You may end up with less of what we call opioid-induced hyperalgesia or feeling more pain because you're taking opioids. And that's a real
thing. Yeah, I'm aware of that.
And that it may be less likely to cause that problematic effect. So
just last question, if I had a choice of doing that or really going into a program, which I may have a choice of, to get entirely off, which would you recommend? I know it's difficult to say, but are there advantages or disadvantages to either option?
Well, the advantage of tapering off of opioids is that if you're suffering from that rebound pain effect of opioids, which happens frequently, you will feel better off opioids. And that's something people must be aware of, that chronic use of opioids lowers your pain threshold. You end up in more pain when you take opioids chronically. So getting off of them normalizes that. So, if you feel like you can do it, try tapering slowly.
Okay.
Randy, thank you very much. Appreciate your
call. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Okay. We'll go to David in Burlington, Vermont. David, you're on.
Yes. I've been on Suboxone for about 5 years, and I've heard that it's very difficult to come off of, even more so than some of the other opiates. I'm just wondering how you feel about that, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay,
David. Thank you. Good question. Suboxone is a medication, again, to treat opioid use disorders, and people, for the most part, choose to stay on it. If you choose to taper off, I suggest you do it with your provider, do it really slowly, and it could take a year to taper off, and that's okay. The measure of success is not whether you're on or off a medicine. It's how you live your life. Just remember that.
We have an email here. It seems like every other kid today is being diagnosed with ADD or ADHD. Why are so many of our children being put on Ritalin? And what can we do as an alternative to medicating kids for bad behavior?
Huh. Well, we are having an epidemic of diagnoses of ADHD. That's true. We are probably overdiagnosing and overtreating. And I think this is part of a cultural conversation we need to have in understanding, especially boys will be more active. I think also if we're more sedentary and on gaming and videos, that's going to be a problem. We're eating a lot of starchy, sugary foods. So I think it's part of a bigger issue. And finally, it's about medicating our essence sometimes, who we are, searching for a pill to kind of quiet down a behavior or, a personality style. So it's a balance of addressing ADHD and also taking a step back and sometimes, just seeing what emerges.
Okay, we're going to take a very short break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Casey and Jennifer and Mary. We're just taking seconds, guys, so stay right where you are.
Support comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital, offering new urological treatments with urologist Dr. Paul Husson, NLH.org. MassMocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presents Available Light with choreographer Lucinda Childs, composer John Adams, and set designer Frank Gehry. March 6th through 8th, MassMocha.org. And Live Well, Albany, New York, providing intensive outpatient psychological services for treatment of eating disorders. AlbanyHPA.com.
We are back thanks to our wonderful Zachary. Five phones are ringing. We'll go to Casey, as promised, in Valencia. Okay, Casey, you're on.
Hey, how you doing?
So far, so good.
Oh, I just wanted to say, mention about the whole Suboxone thing, and, she had mentioned the website where you can go on and, find these doctors. I've been through this for 8 years. I've been going through, heroin addiction. I have actually 60 days clean today.
Congratulations.
And, I just wanted to say, when you go online and you look at that list and you call these doctors, 99% of them are already fully booked up, and it's really hard. So people resort to calling these cash doctors. And, being a drug addict, fresh into recovery, obviously you have no money, and it's extremely hard to, find a doctor. And, and when you do, it's a cash doctor, and it ends up costing you. Like, my first month, it was $600. Oh. I don't have that, so my father was kind enough to foot the bill for that. They need to raise the amount of, patients doctors can have, while they, I know they already upped it once, but they need to do it again because everyone I know can't find a doctor.
You know, Casey, that's a very interesting thing you just said, and I wanted to go back to Dr. Michaels with it for a moment. You said that they have a number of people you can put on some of these rehabilitational drugs. The reason for that is they don't want people to become addicted to these drugs. Is that the idea or what?
Why do they limit it?
Why do they limit you?
I can tell when it first came out that we could prescribe Suboxone for opioid use disorders, the limit was 30, which was a tiny number.
And the rationale for that was?
The rationale was this is a drug that could be misused, and we want to limit its availability in our society. And so the limitation has created a two-tier system, which Casey was talking about, that if you have money, you can go in and see a doctor right away if you have $600 a month. Or if you don't have money, you often have to wait for community mental health or a community program. We're fortunate that we don't have a waiting list currently at the Breen Center. But the limit is 100 patients per person. And
well, it seems so stupid, if you don't mind my saying so.
Well, I didn't make the rule, but it's something we have to abide by.
Sure, of course.
And it's a challenge. And I think it also it creates these situations where doctors are in it for the money, not for the joy of helping someone.
Now, can the doctor, who is, as Casey puts it, is a cash doctor,
yeah.
Can that doctor prescribe this drug without the same limitations you have?
Oh, we have the same limitations. Every doctor can prescribe to a maximum of 100 people, but I could work at the Breen Center and be on salary and see people and not focus on how much money I'm making.
Sure, of course not.
Or I could open a door down the road and charge people $100 for a 10-minute visit.
Interesting. Casey, anything else?
Yeah, one more thing I wanted to say. With Suboxone, you know, just taking Suboxone alone is not going to cure you. You also have to go to some sort of intense treatment, which is actually what I'm doing differently this time. You know, a lot of people under the impression that you can take Suboxone and it's going to make your life all better. But aside from just taking that, you also have to go to, like, you know, extreme counseling. I actually go 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, and
wow.
That seems to help me.
And can you tell us where you go for that?
I go to Hudson Mohawk Recovery Services in Troy, New York.
Great.
Interesting. 5 hours a day. That's terrific, Casey.
Yep. Thank you.
And thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Okay, Casey, we'll sign off now. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. And we'll go to Jennifer in Florida, New York. OJK, Jennifer, you're on.
Hi. I just learned from my sister. She had it. Her son was a freshman in college on full scholarship, bright, lit up the room. Every time he walked in, very friendly, open, happy. He went to a party, and someone put acid in his soda. And within about 6 weeks, he had to drop out of school. And for the last 2 years, he's been clinically depressed. He's been paranoid, agitated, and it's taken 2 years for the doctors to diagnose him with what was referred to as substance abuse syndrome. So I have three questions. One is, it took so long for the doctors to diagnose what had actually occurred and why it had happened. Two, like, why is it so hard to diagnose? And two, his sister and my niece have both said that there were students in their college programs who went through the same thing and they had to leave school. So the second question is this something that's going on in these college campuses? The third question was, I don't really understand it what can be done for it, what the treatment would be. I know that she's just found a day program. He goes in 5 days a week, and during the day he's at this hospital where they do art therapy, music therapy, and I think they're putting him on a cocktail of drugs to try to help him. So can you explain what this is and what's happened and what the prognosis might be for this young man?
Sure. Well, you know, I don't know him, so I can't speak specifically about, you know, what he's experiencing. But it can happen, and it's not infrequent, that when young people go to college, they have an exposure to substances, and it can bring on the first episode of an emotional illness or a mental illness. That's they go hand in hand. The stress or the exposure to a substance may bring on a depression, or in some cases schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. So there can be a co-occurring disorder. That's one option. It's very rare for a substance to have such a long-lasting effect 2 years down the road. So I would just worry that he has something co-occurring with that substance use that he experienced in college. But that's the age group, you know, the late teens, early 20s, when mental health issues emerge, whether it's depression, anxiety, bipolar. That's the peak time, you know, under 25 that we see that.
So he could go from completely happy, well-adjusted, no signs of any clinical depression, no signs of any mental disorder, no history, family history of mental problems with one episode like that, and it could just bring something out that might be dormant? Is that what you're saying?
You know, I don't know his exact situation, but there may have been something else going on, perhaps, or maybe the stress of using a substance led to a vulnerability in another area. The problem with psychiatry is we never get to know for sure. You know, if it's an infection, we can look at the bug and we can look at the sensitivities to antibiotics. We don't have that in psychiatry, and sometimes it remains a mystery, and it's upsetting, but it's the reality.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jennifer. I know somebody, a wonderful man who had a kid. Kid was terrific until one day he just turned schizophrenic. I mean, it was. Yeah. So it can happen, you know, that a quarter gets turned.
Yes, and we don't really know. We don't have those concrete tests the way we do in primary care. We have no blood test. We don't even have a brain scan.
Right. Okay, that was, I think that was Jennifer. Maybe not. All right, no, that was. Okay, so let's go to Mary in Goshen. Mary in Goshen, you're on.
Hi, I have a question about the new medication Contrays. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Contrays, no, let's hear.
It's for binge eating disorder.
Oh, okay. I heard there was a new medicine. I've not prescribed it, so.
Okay, because it's just come out, and I've started to take it. But I guess if you're not familiar with it, I can't really discuss it with you because I was also curious about the interaction of that with my other medications, which are Wellbutrin and Lexapro.
Mary, I don't know about it, but can you tell me, do you feel like it's helping you?
Well, I just started taking it, so I don't really know.
Okay.
There's a ramp-up period. You take one for a week, then the next week you take two, then the next week you take three, and then the next week you take four.
Okay. Let me give you a suggestion. So, you can go online and put in Google search drug-drug interactions, and then you'll go to a site and you can put in all of the medicines you're currently taking, and it will give you information that you either have a mild drug-drug interaction or severe or none. But go there and you'll get all the information you need.
That's a great idea. And what do you and Jennifer, what is it? It's a drug interaction you write into the Google?
It's drug-drug interactions. Drug-drug interactions. And you'll see, you'll click on it, and it will have a list of medications, and then you can also type in the medications. And you can add to your list, and you'll see potential drug-drug interactions.
That's great. Okay.
Oh, that's fantastic. So thank you.
We all learned something. Thanks, Mary.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Thanks.
Let's go to Chris. Okay, Chris, you're on.
Hey, thanks for having me, and I appreciate hearing what's going on today on the radio. And, Doc, I really appreciate that you're giving your time to help people. I have a friend of mine who has been in and out of rehab. He has a lot of issues that he needs. He won't go himself, and I've been friends with him for a long time trying to help him recover. He's an addict. How, you know, we've seen doctors who is on a waiting list for him to get on Suboxone, and this is his only outlet to get help now. It's going down quick. How would I be able to get the information possibly to give him for you as a doctor? Because I think this might help.
Well, you can call the Breen Center. It's BRIEN, Breen Center in Pittsfield. And we have a Suboxone program, and, you know, we would do our best to help him. He could benefit from inpatient treatment, inpatient detoxification, which may be closer to you. But go online and look for providers and word of mouth. Keep calling because there will be a space available.
Well, he's had the opportunity a couple of times to be on Suboxone with a huge amount of money.
Oh, okay.
And money he didn't have.
Yes.
And so we just were going back to heroin. And honestly, that's pretty sad considering this is what this has come to, the life that we live.
The other thing to be aware of is that, you know, any doctor who takes an 8-hour online class and then applies to the DEA can get what we call an X number. The X number is a DEA number that allows that doctor to initially prescribe for 30 people. So, you know, make noise, because if you're being treated by a primary care doctor, that doctor can prescribe Suboxone. He or she just has to get the X number. It's not like I did anything special. You have to get that X number, and then you can treat the people that you're already treating with a medication that they need.
Well, he has a couple of times had the opportunity to see a doctor, but it was a waiting list. and he just gave up. Is there in Pittsfield, Mass, is that correct?
That's right.
Is there the number there that I can have to call?
Your number over there.
Oh, okay. So it's 413-499-0412.
Okay. I really appreciate it, Doc. It means a lot.
Sure.
Chris, we thank you so much for your good call. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Let's go to Jim in Albany. Jim, you're on.
Hey, Doc. How are you?
Hi.
When I'm 58 now, when I was 25, I guess I had severe anxiety, and it was very hard for me to even cope during the day. So the doctor put me on Ativan, and I was taking like 0.5 milligrams of that, and then she had me on Zoloft. And for over the years, I'm 58 now, and I'm still taking it. And for the most part, it's been working really well. You know, I'm not taking that much of it, and I'm getting along pretty good. But in the last year and a half, I've been having like these terrible nightmares, and waking up in the morning and feeling very depressed first thing in the morning. And I was wondering if you could tell me maybe what's going on there or.
Sure. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I have a few suggestions. Sometimes when we take an antidepressant for a long period of time, it becomes less effective. Now, that's not common, but that could be happening with your Zoloft. That's one issue. It's interesting that you're feeling like that when you wake up. If it gets better during the day, I would wonder about sleep apnea. You know, and symptoms of that would be I wake up and I feel depressed, or I have a very dry sensation in my mouth, or I have headaches.
I do wear a CPAP mask.
You do? Excellent. Now, is it set in such a way that it's effective? Do we know? Have you had it tested recently?
No.
Okay. So when you have CPAP, which is the treatment for sleep apnea, every couple of years you should have it retested to make sure it's still working. Because you're changing, you may need a change on your CPAP settings.
Really?
Yes. So consider that, and then you may need an adjustment of your Zoloft.
Also, then there's the Allen way, which is, you know, do an hour of exercise when you get up. It's amazing what it can do for you.
Yeah, and so
what it does for me.
That's a great point. That exercise and mindfulness-based therapies are wonderful for anxiety and depression. They change your brain in a positive way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Jim, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We'll go to Martin in Chatham. Okay, Martin, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking this question. I have a dear relative who lives in Asia, 60 years old, and for the past year we've been worried that he's suffering from early onset of Alzheimer's. His memory, his short-term memory has just been awful. And recently, about a month ago, he admitted to being addicted to smoking heroin that he's been doing for a year every day. And he's checked himself into a facility in Asia just last week. My question is, should we hope that his memory loss has been related to the drugs, or is it possibly, in fact, onset of early Alzheimer's?
Martin, this is a great question, and my answer is that when someone is engaged in active addiction, anything goes. They can look like they have depression, bipolar, Alzheimer's, and we just have no clue what's going on until they get sober. So to me, that's very good news. If he gets sober, my hope is that he will look a lot sharper and more like his old self.
Okay. Well, we have good reason to be hopeful then.
Yes, yes.
Do your best. Do your best, Martin. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Right. Okay. Let's go to Teresa in Pittsfield. Teresa, we're winding down here, so you have to be as brief as you can. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking my call. I first heard you, Dr. Michaels, at a forum that Mayor Dan Bianchi sponsored in Pittsfield concerning a methadone clinic. And really, we talked a lot about the courage of those public officials and doctors treating people in need. And so I just wanted to add my gratitude, I think, to the mayor and to you for making us very well educated.
Oh, thank you. You know, I remember that forum and being a little afraid because the city was in an uproar about methadone. And I think about 5 months after that meeting, the methadone clinic opened and there was no announcement, so no one knew. And hundreds of patients are now getting treated, and it's there's no noise. We're helping people.
Are you hearing noise from the people who used to oppose?
You know, there's a stigma to methadone, and so they say they make negative, nasty comments about people getting treatment, and that's about it. But we know methadone saves lives. People are more likely to be employed. They spend less. They cost less to society. They pay taxes, and they're less likely to engage in criminal activities when they're getting methadone.
Yeah.
So it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, as I like to often point out, if you go to the New York State Library and look up the first the Senate report on methadone, way back, you'll find my name on the front of it. Anyway, it's great to hear from all of you. We are so sorry, Rick and New Paltz. We are not going to be able to take your call today because we are out of time. And I want to thank Dr. Jennifer Michaels, our wonderful friend of the Breen Center, for being with us today. Jennifer, you are truly a hero. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to our wonderful Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. On tomorrow's program, it's the Copyright Forum. Stay tuned now for a news update.